what kind of AI tools are we talking about that really make a difference in your practice?
I'll give you a quick vague answer and then a more specific answer. The vague answer is, I believe that the way we will ask ourselves this question is the same way as if I were to ask you, how do you use the internet in your practice? The specifics are going to be irrelevant because the answer will be everything.
Welcome to Austin, Texas, and welcome to the Phil Klein Dental Podcast. Today we're joined by Dr. Faraj Eder, a Vancouver-based prosthodontist and founder of Transcend Specialized Dentistry, known for his work in advanced cosmetic dentistry, implant rehabilitation, and full mouth restorative care. In this conversation, we'll take a closer look at what digital dentistry actually means in a day-to-day clinical practice for Dr. Eder, not just in theory, but in real workflows, decision-making, and patient care. Dr. Eder will share how he integrates digital tools across his practice, where he's seeing the biggest gains in efficiency and outcomes, and how these technologies are changing the way complex restorative and implant cases are diagnosed and delivered. We'll also explore the role of AI in modern dentistry, what's genuinely useful today, what's still emerging, and how it's beginning to shape everything from diagnostics to treatment planning and patient experience. So if you're looking to get into digital dentistry or expand what you already have, I think you'll find this conversation extremely interesting. Before we bring in our guest, I do want to say that if you're enjoying these episodes and want to support the show, please follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You'll be the first to know about our new releases, and our entire production team will really appreciate it. Dr. Eder, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you, and you certainly work in a beautiful part of the world, Vancouver. I plan to go up there this summer, or even maybe not quite Vancouver, but close to it on the U.S. side and see some beautiful territories and some national parks. But hats off to you for building a great, successful practice in a really beautiful part of the world. So I hope you're enjoying it. Before I throw some questions at you, Dr. Eder, I do want to step back and look at what's happening with digital workflows in dentistry, because in many ways, it feels a lot like a modern day version of the Industrial Revolution. And I don't want to get too textbooky here, but the big change back then was that everything shifted from slow, manual craftsmanship to faster, more efficient systems powered by new technology at that time. And of course, it all began with the steam engine back then. And in a similar way, we're watching dentistry move from messy impressions, multiple appointments, heavy reliance on the artistic lab tech, to something much more automated, streamlined, and in many ways more precise. And with tools like intraoral scanners, cone beam, CAD/CAM, and 3D printing, plus integrated AI with all that, what used to take weeks can now happen in a day, sometimes even in a single visit. And it's not just about speed, because just like the Industrial Revolution changed how people worked and what skills they needed, digital dentistry is pushing all of us to think differently, learn new systems, delegate differently among our team members, and essentially redefine what high-level dentistry means and what clinical efficiency really looks like in today's modern dental practice. So taking all of this into account, Dr. Eder, through the lens of your high-tech digital practice, what does digital workflow really look like for you in your day-to-day routine restorative cases? And where are you seeing the most impact?
Absolutely. Well, first, again, thank you for having me on. And that was a very relevant introduction to where we are when it comes to the world of digital dentistry and just the world of dentistry in general. I used to say, you know, several years ago when I talk about digital workflows, I'd say that, you know, today we focus on calling it digital dentistry. But really, within probably a very short span of time, it's just going to be dentistry. It's like when we talked about digital radiographs, and you know, for some years there was an emphasis on the digital aspect, and as it was adopted more and more, when you say radiographs, you almost are routinely thinking of digital radiographs. So that implementation just becomes more mainstream. And from my perspective, as you said very, very well, the key is not necessarily the speed. The key is not necessarily the efficiency. Those are cherries on top, as I say. where we've really seen a revolution when it comes to how we practice dentistry is the predictability of the clinical work that we can do. You know, I know that we've been doing exceptionally excellent clinical work for 100 or more years, utilizing traditional workflows, and we'll probably continue to see excellent clinical work for a long time to come using traditional workflows. The difference, I think, where we introduce these digital technologies is the predictability of doing it consistently, not relying on, you know, how do I feel on that given day? How's my lab technician doing on that given day? And just having that ability to consistently produce really great quality work for our patients.
Right, so the variables, those variables that are always in front of us when we're practicing traditional dentistry, are minimized. I mean, there's still variables out there that can affect predictable outcomes and clinical success. But if you utilize, you're saying if you utilize the digital tools that we have out there in an intelligent way and you know what you're doing, you're minimizing the risk of failures that don't necessarily have to happen if you maintain good digital practice. So, in your routine work, and we'll get into implants in a second, tell us what a dentist should really consider, one that is looking to get more into a digital workflow in their practice for routine stuff, and talk about the relationship with the laboratory, if there is a laboratory involved, or should some of these restorations be done in-house. That kind of thing. And what are you doing in your practice for these routine restorations?
Yeah, so for routine restorative dentistry, I would say there's two must-haves if you really want to take advantage of the digital workflows. The first being a intraoral scanner. So being able to switch into the world of digital impressions has significant benefits. And those benefits, I think, in our mind, we have to shift away from the idea that digital impressions are an alternative to PVS or whatever other traditional material we're utilizing. It is, but that's not necessarily the benefit of it. The benefit of it are all of the additional features that it unlocks in how we can practice restorative dentistry. So, in addition to it not being messy and not having the goop in the mouth and all those things that we can just logically figure out, there are certain things that are just not possible to do in our traditional world that you can only do if you're taking advantage of these technologies. What are some examples of that? Modifying how you take your impression. For me, as a prosthodontist, I do sometimes more complex restorative work. So, if I'm preparing, let's say, 10, 12, 14 teeth for crowns, if I was doing a traditional impression, I'd have to try to capture them all with a tray and go about that workflow. Whereas with digital impressions, whether I'm doing two or three or 10 or 14, I can break them up into sequence because I have now the ability to stop and start scanning again, work my way around with the preps, work my way around with the retraction cords if I'm using retraction cords. So it allows us to just to rethink how that clinical workflow goes about things. Another very day-to-day example is, you know, I remember when I used to work with a traditional workflow, one of the most common things, because we like as dentists to, of course, be as conservative as possible in our preparations. I still remember commonly getting the call back from the lab in the evening saying, hey, we got your models, we poured the models, and, you know, for that crown you want, I need just a half millimeter more space to be able to give you what you need. So what do you want? Do you want me to give you a reduction guide, or are you going to see the patient back? That no longer exists in the digital workflow because when I scan my patient, for example, for a crown prep, I take the opposing, I take the bite. I can, within seconds, know exactly what the occlusal clearance that's there is. And modifying it or changing it doesn't require me to redo any of the work. It just requires me to modify within 10 to 20 seconds. So it's things like that where we can think outside of the box and just come up with new ways to do things based on working in the digital world that I think provide the most benefit other than just thinking of it as replacing, you know, impression material.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense. Now, there are a lot of dentists that I talk to that say that they have a scanner, but they're not interested in designing anything in the office. They don't want to get involved with the software. Now, I know there's new technology. It's actually one push of a button and your crown is designed in a minute, and it's phenomenal stuff. They're partnering with a lot of scanning companies. You may know who they are at this point. Are you familiar with Circle One?
Yeah, I've heard of Circle, and then there's a few others, like 3Shape's doing it, ExoCAD's doing it, SprintRay are doing it. This AI design automation is definitely the way things are headed.
Right. And this particular design software is all cloud-based. So there's nothing that is in the hardware at the site of the office. It's all done in the cloud. It's very resource light on the client side. It's very interesting how this is going to be developed, but a lot of the companies are partnering with this basically a software AI company that will really make a big impact on simplifying the design process. But the point is that they're not really interested in being a laboratory is the mentality. That's the mindset that a lot of dentists have. I didn't go to dental school to become a lab. So I'm going to use the scanner as a replacement for a tray and a replacement for impression material, and I don't need alginate anymore. I could do digital wax ups. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, from my personal perspective, I'm also not in the game of wanting to become a lab technician. Now, I'm lucky our practice, we have an in-house lab with CAD/CAM designers and ceramists. So you can think of them like a third-party lab, except they're in our same space. And I delegate all the work to them, just like I think most dentists would do, unless they want to start to get into the design and manufacturing themselves. With that being said, the tools that are unlocked with these digital workflows not only benefit the clinician, but more importantly, they significantly change how we communicate with our lab. So my communication with the lab now is completely 360 degrees different, and it's much, much more efficient. And now they know exactly what it is that I'm referring to because we're both looking at the same digital file. Whether we're in the same building or not doesn't matter. We're both able to look at the same digital file and be able to assess things. Again, back to the point of intraoral scanners, if I prep a crown, I have the ability on the spot to zoom in, 20x and really look at my margins. And if I can't see where my margins are, there's no reason for me to press send because I'm not going to send it to the lab for them to only guess my margins. So it gives you that instant feedback and the ability to talk to the lab as to what things you want them to pay more attention to. So yeah, I fully agree with that. There's a lot of dentists that don't want to take on the lab component, but these digital workflows will help you stay in line with your lab. Because whether we like it or not, 90 plus percent of labs are switching to a digital workflow because for them, it just makes no sense anymore not to, just based off of the efficiencies that come with CAD/CAM as opposed to the manual way of doing things. And so even if a dentist is sending a PVS impression,
They'll
they're
scan
scanning it or
it. Yeah.
scanning the model and then going into the CAD/CAM workflow. And that actually introduces inaccuracies.
Right.
So the more we bridge back and forth between the digital and physical workflow, the more we introduce errors in that system. And so staying in a consistent workflow actually helps with that.
Yeah, for sure. So the intraoral scanner is a must-have at this point. We don't want to go from analog to digital back to analog. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever. And that's a very, very good point. So when it comes to implant dentistry, how have digital applications improved your diagnosis, your treatment planning, and your surgical and restorative outcomes compared to traditional analog methods?
Yeah, probably even more so than what we talked about for restorative dentistry. Digital workflows, in my opinion, are probably safe to say the gold standard of how we should do implant dentistry today. In other words, the utilization of cone beam CT, the ability to then superimpose cone beam CT to some sort of digital scan of the patient, whether it's an intraoral scan or, like we said, the lab scanning your impression. Superimposing and merging those two things and then doing digital planning to me is the gold standard of implant dentistry. Even if you end up doing the surgery freehand, by the way. So it's not necessarily the guided part, although, of course, is significantly beneficial, but just the process of visualizing what it is that you're about to do before you flap or do whatever you do surgically to the patient adds tremendous value to how that procedure happens. Because you've almost done a digital practice run. And now there's less trying to solve problems during a surgery. You've solved all those problems in the planning phase, and now you're just trying to execute on that plan. So that takes us to the second piece of technology. I mentioned there are two that are a must-have. In my opinion, the second must-have in today's world is a 3D printer. Because with a 3D printer, nowadays, the barrier to entry when it comes to cost has significantly reduced. The speed of printing has significantly improved, and so it's less of a waiting issue. And the ability to utilize 3D printers, in particular with implant dentistry, where we can transfer that digital planning that we talked about between a cone beam CT and a scan, doing all of our digital virtual implant planning, and then transferring that by 3D printing a surgical guide to allow us to execute on that plan very precisely, is, in my opinion, a no-brainer, even if we think of it from an ROI perspective. Once someone gets over the initial learning curve of utilizing guides and digital workflows for implant dentistry, just the chair time that you save on its own during the procedures will probably be a net positive in the ROI. And that's not accounting for patient experience, recovery time, accuracy of procedure, success, and all those other variables that'll also improve.
Now, do you have specialists that place the implants in your practice, or do you do that yourself?
I do place implants, so I'm a surgical prosthodontist, so I do the surgeries too. But our practice is multi-specialty, so we have a periodontist as well that places implants, and then we have another prosthodontist, and we also have an orthodontist. She doesn't place implants, and occasionally we'll also work with oral surgeons in the community too for some larger zygoma implants or things like that.
So, in your opinion, based on all the advantages of using these digital tools with the AI, and plus we didn't even talk about the case acceptance. I mean, that goes w without saying, right? That when you show these patients the case in front of them on a screen after scanning, where they could be taken to if they accept the treatment, I mean, that's got to boost case acceptance, right? That's kind of thing I'm just putting in there. But there's no question that the digital aspect of this creates an environment where you have much more predictable outcomes, like you said. Now, you do a lot of work through the BC Dental Study Club. Are you the founder of that group?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations on that, because I hear that's very successful. What are the most clinically relevant topics or techniques that general dentists are consistently trying to master right now, based on the fact that you're so active with the BC Dental Study Club?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a range, and it depends on where they are in their career trajectory. I mean, through the BC Dental Study Club, we do a variety of programs ranging from like a 1 year implant mini residency, workshops on like porcelain veneers. We do composites, we do endo, we do crown and bridge basics. And what I find is, or at least what I recommend normally to our members, is when they're earlier on in their career and just starting out, it's really to focus on your bread and butter and try to get confident with the basics, whether that be crown and bridge, maybe slightly more complex endo extractions, things like that. As you start to be interested in developing more skills and more complex things, that's where we get into things like veneers or implants or more advanced occlusion slash full mouth reconstruction cases. So we offer a variety of things, and I find that it just depends on where they are. But what I do find is common amongst all of the courses is their interest in the modern applications of how to perform these procedures. Sometimes dental schools are outdated, or there's just not enough time to go through every way of doing things. So what we find there's a lot of interest in is, okay, even if I am doing this procedure on a day-to-day, how could I be doing it in a more modern way using the tools that are available to me instead of just sticking to the textbook method that maybe now there's a better way for?
Yeah, when you say modern way, what does that mean, modern way, as far as
The
technique?
Techniques or the workflows. So, for example, digital technology is a more modern way to have a workflow for how you do certain procedures. Bonding protocols, right? There's a lot more modern science and a lot more modern evidence as to what the right bonding protocols are, how to prepare a tooth for bonding, how to prepare a restoration for bonding. Systems have changed, biomaterials have changed. So updates on all of those aspects just allow us to take in that information and perform the procedure in a probably different way than what we learned 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and make those changes. And of course, weighing that with evidence, because we also focus a lot on evidence-based decisions. So the last thing anyone should do is change the way they practice based on me saying, hey, here's a more modern way of doing it.
Without a doubt, evidence-based is the key. So these dentists that come to the BC Dental Study Club may not have had a whole lot of continuing education other than what was mandated since they've been in dental school. So there's still a lot of them, just by what they learned in dental school, continue to practice those techniques for 10 years, let's say. So when you say modern, it doesn't necessarily mean digital modern. It means the proper technique. For instance, when it comes to adhesion, are you an advocate of selective etch, for the enamel, and then using a universal adhesive for everything, and obviously the dentin when appropriate, if there is dentin that you're working with. Is that something that you're a proponent of?
Yeah, I like to work with a selective etch technique. I also like to do immediate dentin sealing protocols for when there is dentin that's exposed, especially if I'm doing bonded procedures, like if they're onlays or veneers, as you mentioned. If my goal is to lute a restoration, because we often differentiate between luting and bonding, if my goal is to lute a restoration and I've got adequate retention form, then I'm not as concerned really about the overall bonding steps like I would be for a restoration that is non-retentive and dependent on that bond strength.
And when you do a dentin, immediate dentin seal, real quick in like 1 minute, tell us how you do that with the adhesive. What do you use and what do you put on there? And obviously you cure it. It sits there for a while before the final prosthesis is delivered.
Correct.
So tell us what that immediate dentin seal actually means clinically.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, without getting into too many details, the concept of immediate dentin sealing is the idea that the best time to bond to dentin is when it's freshly cut dentin. So if we think of our traditional way of doing things, we're prepping a tooth, exposing dentin, putting a temporary on, and then maybe a week or two later seeing the patient back. And now those dentinal tubules have been contaminated. It's much harder to get into them with proper bonding protocols. So the concept of immediate dentin sealing is if you're prepping for a non-retentive bonded restoration, like we said, like a veneer, an inlay or an onlay, or something similar, you may want to utilize immediate dentin sealing, which means when you've exposed that dentin, before you temporize or do anything else, you go through the bonding protocol related to the dentin, which may include selective etching in some areas, reduced etching times for dentin areas, and then utilizing a bonding agent, depending on the bonding agent, whether it's one step or two step, or depending on the bonding system you utilize, but getting the most effective bond to the dentin immediately at the time of preparation and preserving that.
Do you incorporate a flowable into that cure, into your dentin seal?
So there are concepts of, you know, you can do immediate dentin sealing and not incorporate flowable. At times, it is helpful to incorporate a base layer of flowable, particularly if the restoration is going to seat in an inlay prep or an onlay prep design aspect. It also sometimes helps with avoiding undercuts. So instead of over-preparing teeth, using flowable for that base layer will help preserve tooth structure because you can get rid of undercuts additively instead of subtractively. So yes, we do integrate that as well.
Yeah. Now, regarding AI, real quick, just in a few minutes, it's getting a lot of attention. It's built into equipment that dentists buy. It's built into scanners. It's built into printers. What are you actually using today in clinical practice? Because you have a very high-tech practice that goes beyond the hype and genuinely improves the things we're talking about, diagnosis, efficiency, patient care. What kind of AI tools are we talking about that really make a difference in your practice?
I'll give you a quick vague answer and then a more specific answer. The vague answer is, I believe that the way we will ask ourselves this question is the same way as if I were to ask you, how do you use the internet in your practice? I think AI is that big of a game changer that the specifics are going to be irrelevant because the answer will be everything. And we're not quite there yet, but that's definitely where we're headed. I think the answer to that question will be everything. AI will just improve everything. As of today, the specifics where we are utilizing it and seeing success beyond the hype, because I think that's a great way to put it. A lot of it initially, just like with the internet, right? There's a bubble initially. It's just a lot of excitement. And then that bubble bursts and you end up with something that's actually solid. So what I think is currently solid is, from a clinical perspective, how it's helped make tools more accurate. So all of our intraoral scanners have AI built into them. That AI is what helps the scanner, for example, exclude a moving tongue, exclude your finger if you're scanning it. So there's certain things that are just happening behind the scenes that help. Radiographic interpretation, I think, is useful. Of course, if we think of it from a profession perspective, very useful for insurance and things like that. But if we talk about it clinically, where I find it to be the most useful is, of course, giving us as clinicians some insight on things to look at. But more importantly, it's the patient communication part. As you know, with patients, if you're meeting them for the first time, some patients don't necessarily immediately trust the clinician. When you're showing them technology and saying, here, this is artificial intelligence that's showing maybe there's something going on here, maybe there's something going on there, let me investigate further, it removes the barrier of, do I trust you and what you're telling me? And it's now more systemized. So I find that to be helpful. And then we can get into more advanced AI things clinically, such as jaw tracking technologies that can now utilize artificial intelligence to give you very, very accurate condylar settings, functional relationship movements. So from that perspective, it's also great. And for me, AI is a daily tool for the operational side of a practice. As a practice owner, for me, that's been really the biggest game changer. We've implemented AI in almost every aspect of our operations, where we just help our team be set up for success, being able to minimize the routine things that they have to do repeatedly and have them focus on the things that actually need a human interaction with the patient.
Right. I mean, a dental practice is no different than any other business from that standpoint. It's very unique, of course, because it's a dental practice, but from the standpoint of utilizing AI to run your business, to show the customer, in our case, the patient, what you're doing, build trust. I mean, that's just universal right now, and you're absolutely correct about that analogy. It's like saying, what is the internet good for? You mentioned jaw tracking. What I've heard about jaw tracking is that when you use it, the benefit is so tremendous when it comes to the delivery of the prosthesis, because
Oh, yeah.
they're saying the doctors that I'm talking to, the dentist that I'm talking to, and I'm so glad you brought it up because I'd love you to hear your opinion, is that they literally do almost no adjustment when they deliver that crown or bridge because the jaw tracking handles all the movements that occur between the two extremes. So when you put those little stickers on and you do the jaw tracking, it basically builds all the possible movements for the laboratory to see in between the two extreme points.
Exactly. And it's so significant that I say I do a lot of full mouth reconstructions on teeth, worn down dentitions, increasing vertical dimension, and that sort of thing. So I always say if I were to ever need a full mouth reconstruction in today's world, I would refuse to have it done without virtual jaw tracking. It's just that much of a game changer in terms of removing guesswork. No matter what we say, like without it, we're guessing a lot of things. The source of error that comes to us, and we see it as occlusal adjustments, comes from two things: guessing, which means utilizing average settings on an articulator, arbitrary hinge access opening. All of those things introduce errors clinically that are reflected as bite adjustments, and then manufacturing errors. So again, the digital workflow helps reduce those. And then virtual jaw tracking completely removes the guesswork. I'm no longer working with a average setting articulator, or no longer going through the steps of trying to fully adjust an articulator and probably not doing it very accurately at by the end of it.
That's a
It,
game
it's
changer. It's really
a
a game
hundred
changer.
percent,
Yeah,
a hundred percent.
I wish they would incorporate something like that in clear aligner therapy because they're straightening teeth. And these patients say, wow, I love the way my teeth look. They're beautiful, but I have no maximum intercuspation anymore. Like I can't chew like I used to. I'm speaking, firsthand here. So before we let you go, Dr. Etter, I do want to touch on the training that you're providing. You offer a highly regarded hands-on porcelain veneers curriculum, and you've partnered with Ivoclar to support that training. So, from a clinical standpoint, which materials and systems have truly earned your trust to a point where they play a big role in your veneers training program?
Yeah, the entire concept behind the veneers program is that, as you probably know or have heard, there's very little structured education on this procedure. Although it's a very common and very popular procedure, there's very little structured education on the right way to utilize evidence-based techniques and theories to do porcelain veneers in a way that's systematic and predictable. So that was the concept behind doing this. In my practice, you know, a lot of what we do is redo veneer cases because patients come, they've had them done, they're unhappy, and now we're redoing them. And I started to think over the years, you know, those errors that took place that caused the patient to come and have these veneers redone are very avoidable. And it's not that it's a bad dentist, it's probably that they just didn't know any better regarding certain things. So we put together a 2-day, very comprehensive hands-on program on everything that someone would need to know to implement porcelain veneers. For all of my programs, what I think has had allowed us to have good reception to them is the fact that I genuinely just share what I do. I share what I do with my patients on a day-to-day. And we partnered with Ivoclar on this because I'm a big fan of the Ivoclar system when it comes to bonding and the cements that are utilized for particularly for veneers, but also for other things. They're light cured resin composites and they're bonding agents. So we wanted to integrate that in a practical way into the practice because not only is it important to have a partner that allows you to share the clinical knowledge, but also a partner where they have their product supported with very high levels of evidence. And that's what I think Ivoclar does very well. There's very good evidence to show here's when to use this, and here's why, and here's what the benefit of using this, and so on and so forth.
How do you typically fabricate your veneers, given that you have a lab in your office? I know a lot of dentists are doing chairside milling, but does that also apply to your veneers?
I don't do a lot of chairside milling. I don't do a lot of same-day dentistry for me because most of the cases I'm working on are a little too complex, at least for me to find a way to do this that fits with our schedule. So we focus on a more traditional workflow. We utilize, and by traditional, I still mean all the digital tools, all the digital technology, but sending it to a lab, having the lab make your veneers. And interestingly that you said milling, because right now we mill, for me personally in my clinic, we mill almost all of our restorations. The only exception is thin porcelain veneers. We still like to press those because the evidence still shows up to today, and I'm sure it'll change as milling technology improves. But as of today, the evidence shows that very thin porcelain veneers, you get better internal adaptation and better marginal adaptation when you press it compared to when you mill it if you're under half a millimeter in thickness, which we try to have our veneers be. We try to have them around 0.3 to 0.5 millimeters in thickness.
And that's a laboratory process because that's a different material. Obviously, the milling material is different than the pressing material.
Yeah, and that's another reason why we partnered with Ivoclar on this, because lithium disilicate Emax, very well studied, very well bonded to tooth structure. And so it's also a natural ecosystem for us to be able to complete these porcelain veneer procedures. And we do them twice a year here in Vancouver. We found so much interest, people traveling from all across North America for them, that we've recently also launched them in Toronto, in Canada, but then also planning to do them in Scottsdale and Miami, Dallas and Chicago. So we're doing a tour.
Fantastic. Now, when you're doing your last question, when you're doing your restorative dentistry and you seem like you're the kind of dentist that would prefer, like you just said, to actually do an indirect restoration rather than a direct restoration in a deep class two, right? You'd rather do it with your laboratory in-house. What do you do? Do you mill some sort of hybrid block for a quick mill because let's say it doesn't require tremendous extra strength because it's just like a small onlay or something or a DO. What kind of block do you use and what are you doing there?
So I don't do a lot of like class twos because normally we're referral based, so they'll see their dentist for that. Now, occasionally I'll get a case where there's limited mouth opening or something that just makes it more complex. And I still like to do lithium disilicate, so we'll mill in that situation because normally they're not ultra thin. We'll mill lithium disilicate for inlays or onlays. More recently, we've been playing around with 3D printed resins as an alternative to direct composite resin. I still think porcelain is superior than resin, but I do think that a well-made 3D printed resin using the right resin material might be a superior option than a direct
Direct
composite
composite,
resin
yeah,
restoration.
without a doubt. And with a patient that has limited resources, that may not be able to go with, the ideal
A porcelain,
situation, right? That those solutions can last a long time. And 3D printing is just in the beginning of its evolution. With the kind of materials that are going to be able to be printed on a chairside, it's going to be amazing.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure if you've come across this yet, but the concept of pressed 3D printing, where there's a company that's now come up with that to be able to press a 3D printed restoration in under, 9 minutes is going to be a game changer for this type of thing. And now it's a matter of just material technology and material science. And I know that Ivoclar, for example, is one of the companies that's working really hard to come up with some very innovative resins to allow us to push the envelope when it comes to 3D printing as well. So I think it's an exciting time to be in
Oh,
dentistry.
absolutely, absolutely. And with those software applications that allow you to push a button and it automatically, I mean, in less than 30, 40 seconds, it designs the thing perfectly based on all your scans, and then you print the restoration. It's an exciting time, let's put it that way. Compared to the days when they didn't even have a dental chair, when the patient would actually lay on the floor and the dentist would do the dentistry with the patient's head between their legs.
With
That's
a
how they would
cigarette in their hand,
With a
probably.
cigarette, yeah, with a cigarette in their hand. Yeah, we've made it. We've certainly progressed there, Dr. Etter. All right. Well, listen. Thank you very much for your time. You're a brilliant dentist. One day, if I'm in Vancouver, I certainly want to see your operation out there. It would be
Please do,
amazing.
yeah, anytime. We'd love to host you.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have you on again on this show. And thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.